Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, July 13, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 542 of the Biden-Harris administration, 114 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, and our Patreon is BobSeskaShow.com. Okay, so we were supposed to talk with Robbie Pickering today. He's the writer, creator, and executive producer of the Gaslit miniseries on the Starz Network, but there was a scheduling mix-up, and so we had to postpone Robbie's appearance for next week or maybe the week after. We're going to let you know on that one. So instead, the great Cliff Schechter is here for his monthly appearance to talk about abortion, ballot initiatives, the Ohio Senate race, the latest from the 1-6 committee hearings, and so much more. Don't forget to subscribe to Cliff's YouTube channel where he's posting daily barn burner videos. That's youtube.com/C Schechter, link in the description. Meantime, if you like what you hear, please help support this show by subscribing to our bonus content at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Alrighty, here's me and Saul Goodman sound alike. The great Cliff Schechter is here.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
Now the time has come to see the writing on the floor.
Okay, I was in Watergate land all day. I was prepping for this interview that we were supposed to do with Robbie Pickering until there was a scheduling mix-up. And so I'm not familiar with what's gone on with this 10-year-old girl who was raped, had to go across state lines in order to get abortion services. And I guess it was the Wall Street Journal said that that story was maybe made up. What's going on with that? What's happening with that story?
The story is they're absolutely wrong.
Yeah.
The story is the right wing being the right wing. It was sourced enough so that the Cincinnati Inquirer and other newspapers like that publish it. The Cincinnati Inquirer is a very conservative newspaper. Mm-hmm. Yes, they drew the line, what we're all sane people do, and they didn't endorse Trump, but they've endorsed, you know, Rob Portman and Steve Chabot and all these crappy characters from around here, these Republicans, for years. Just the Columbus Dispatch reported it, and that's a pretty conservative newspaper. It wasn't like, oh, the liberal media. I mean, of course, that's what the right winger said. So they came after it, and I don't know where they got their little thing from, but somebody questioned and said, oh, it's a single source, they have no proof, blah blah blah. And of course, then today they arrested the guy who did it, and he's now in court, and there is abundant proof. And, you know, none of these guys admit that. I mean, we know who they are. Or not who they are. We know what they are. Mm-hmm. None of them will admit any fault, any whatever. They've just deleted their tweets and moved on.
Well, know? even Glenn Kessler at the Washington Post was dubious about the story and has now announced that he's updated his story with his new information so as to give it more validity. But what
but
did
the
these
ones
people
that piss me off almost more sometimes?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but like he's supposed to be this arbiter of fact. And they just feel like they have this thing inside of them where if they're attacking Republicans 50% of the time, they got to attack Democrats the other 50%. So they have to ask the question. There was no, I always forget, I can curse on here, right?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yes.
I mean, there was no fucking question that needed to be asked there. None.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say fuck every other word. Just sometimes it's appropriate. So I need to know I can say
it. Well, this is one of those occasions. It's absolutely appropriate now. Yeah.
I mean, like, there just was no reason for that, for it to be questioned. It was sourced well enough by major newspapers that are certainly not in the tank with the left to decide to write this thing. And you know, the right did their little game to distract from the story itself and want to turn it into a scandal that's about reporters and about liberal media pushing it and liberal types like you and me pushing something that's not true. So everybody forgets that there's a poor little girl here who is the victim of their fascistic, ridiculous policy.
Yep.
And so they do all that, further compounding. So now on top of everything else, they're basically saying either this 10-year-old doesn't exist or she's alive. On top of every other indignity they've thrown upon her from the fact that she was the victim of sexual assault. She's fucking 10 years old, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
It was 3 days beyond the ridiculous 6-week ban that our little troll governor, Mike DeWine, signed, who's been an anti-choice fucking, you know, bulldog his entire career. And now they go and they arrest this guy and he's in court. And obviously they're proven to be full of shit yet again. But the Glenn Kesslers and people like that, he was the biggest one I saw, you know, who did this. But a few others, too, started asking the question, oh, well, maybe it's not true. Do you have any reason to believe it's not true if major publications have published it? If you don't, how about you try shutting the fuck up?
Right.
Just an idea, which is what I ended up tweeting out. Like, you know, if you don't want to embarrass yourself anymore, mainstream media, if you don't want to look any more pathetic than you already do, like you're crouched in a corner saying, please don't hurt me, right wingers, then maybe why don't you get your facts straight and stop looking like amateurs and just make sure that you know that there's actually a problem. And if you don't, shut the fuck up.
This shit is so predictable, Cliff. I mean, the fact that they're going after the veracity of a 10-year-old rape victim is perfectly in keeping with the Republican Party that we've been witnessing for 20 years now, which loves to go after people who have no media training, children, school principals. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They go after what I call non-combatants. That's their favorite target. And this is perfectly in keeping with that.
Because, you know, when they come after me or whatever, you know, fuck them. They don't scare me. But, you know, they don't scare you, obviously, either. But, like, you know, they do this. I mean, like, you know, I'll never forget. I don't remember which one of the conventions it was, but we had, like, you know, this kid who had, like, had some sort of a disability, and they were cutting like healthcare funds or whatever, and they went after him and like said he was faking it. I'm trying to remember the whole story. Like they're such fucking ghouls. To wake up every day and be that evil. I don't know how one does it. I really don't.
Yeah, it's a way to make themselves seem bigger and tougher than they actually are if they're beating on 10-year-olds. I mean, you remember Graham Frost, right? I mean, there was Michelle Malkin stalked him at his house.
That's the one I think I was thinking of. Actually.
Yeah, yeah. There was that little boy who was at the signing for the ACA and stood next to Barack Obama when he signed that legislation. They went after him, too. It's absolutely
the Gold Star parents.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, Jesus Christ, they've lost.
Oh, the cons. Yeah. War. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they chose to get up and speak, and yes, they chose, but they got up and they spoke, and I don't remember the whole speech, but I think a lot of it was really, you know, thanking Obama and thanking Biden, and, you know, Biden and of course Donald Trump and his people went after them and ripped them to shreds, and I mean, just. These people are awful.
Along those lines, there's something I've been thinking about for a couple of weeks now, certainly since the Dobbs decision was handed down. And this is based partly on conversations I've had with Kimberly, who I don't know how many women you know on Twitter who have quite a lot of visibility, but the kind of DMs they get on a regular basis are far beyond, in terms of their awfulness, far beyond the kind of DMs that you and I get as white men. And so one of the things that Kimberly has seen is this, I don't know, it's this repeated meme that gets sent out to a lot of women, Kimberly included, which is from Trump supporters, Republicans, obviously anti-abortion people, who write to women and say, I own your body now. The unforeseen consequences of this Dobbs decision obviously impacts reproductive age women, anyone of reproductive age, pregnant women, obviously, young girls, rape victims, all points in between. But there's something broader here that has empowered misogynists to believe that because of this legislation, they now possess ownership over women. They possess.
Well, they're making it obvious to like what we know. Like,
yeah,
we know that's what it's actually about. And they try to claim, no, it's not. It's about the life of the baby and blah, 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 blah. And it's totally about the life of the baby, which is why I try to cut prenatal care. I try to cut early childhood intervention funds. I try to cut preschool. Yeah. I try to cut schooling. I try to cut all sorts of welfare programs for single moms. Because, yeah, you care about the fucking baby, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, just to sort of add it on and make it that much more obvious. They come along, and of course, they do that,
yeah.
which is at a moment where they're sort of angry, and whatever. They let it all out and say, "I own you,"
yeah,
because that's what it's about in the end.
Yeah, exactly. So what this is going to do is, because of that sense of ownership, that possessive, dominant behavior, which was there, quite frankly, prior to Dobbs when Roe was still in existence, but it's now being augmented. And right. What this is going to do, it's going to manifest so much more domestic abuse, so much more violence against women, whether it's beatings or actual murders and so on, because there are so many misogynistic dumb shits who have that toxic masculinity circulating through their veins. And if they get the sense from their elected leadership that they own women's bodies now, that's going to give them even more impetus to commit these crimes, isn't it?
Well, of course. And like, as if that were something that they were even trying to hide, like, these leaders in these states, the others didn't get around to it in time before the Supreme Court went in the ridiculous decision overturned Roe. Mm-hmm. But even before that, you had Texas already saying that with its law that you putting bounties on women.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to make $10,000? Ex-boyfriend who's beaten the hell out of their girlfriend, who's a complete piece of shit, who's a domestic abuser. Here you go. You know,
yeah.
Find what's going on and tell us if, you know, that your ex-girlfriend spy on her, look at her windows and her Facebook page and just completely violate her privacy anywhere you can think of. And if you really want to get back at her, oh my God, you think she may be even contemplating an abortion? Let us know. Here's 10 grand.
God, there's so many downsides to this. It's hard to even begin to list them. We've listed a few of them here, but the list goes on and on and on. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and I know for a fact that you've kind of worked on campaigns along these lines, which is the idea of ballot initiatives as a way to push back. Now, some ballot initiatives, you may not get enough signatures to get the initiative on the ballot, or referendum, as the case may be. But a lot of times they do end up succeeding, don't they? I mean, that seems like a viable path forward to kind of circumvent some of these trifectas in the gulag states, right?
Yeah, no, it exactly is. It's sort of, we used it in a couple different ways. It was the ones I worked on were before the, and we sadly may have to do this again now, before the Obergefell decision that made gay marriage equality the law of the land. That was something that had to be put on state ballots. And we used a number of state ballots to push gun control, gun safety measures.
Yeah.
Washington State, Nevada, I'm trying to think where else. There are a couple others, and I've often thought we should use those more aggressively. And you know, if it's expensive, but we have people on our side who have money, and you know, if you're not going to use it for that, and you say you care about this stuff, what are you using it for? You know, because there are places where we're so just, there's such entrenched power. I mean, the story here in Ohio is, you know, we passed a referendum with 70% of the vote, trying ungerrymandering our you know, our state house and house of representatives. And of course, the Republicans have fought, delayed, not listened to the Supreme Court, which has a 4-3 majority that favors the Constitution here,
yeah,
and did everything they can to slow walk the process. And in the end, they're going to probably be rewarded with, yes, they're going to have the districts are not going to be as gerrymandered. Like, we may end up gaining one or two seats out of this whole thing. But the Republicans right now in this state, like, we, you know, this is a state in the end that's still, you know, however well Trump did here, because he played very well up in the northern parts with the anti-trade rants and that kind of stuff that he didn't believe in. But, like, for the most part, we're a lean Republican, let's say 4-point lean Republican state. Mm-hmm. And, like, they're winning, you know, 75% of the, you know, when it comes to like the state house seats and stuff like that. And the congressional, I think it was like, what, I'm trying to think of what it was, 13-3 or whatever was their advantages.
Yeah.
I mean, really in the end, they, you know, if you're looking at like 12 seats or something like that, or 15 seats or something like that, they should have one or two more than us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And they're setting it up so that they have more like 75-80%. It's utter bullshit.
Yeah.
So in the end, like the they were forced to sort of along the way change a little bit, but they fought it all the way. And so that's my worry too, is like, at what point do we think that state legislatures that don't believe in democracy anymore, and let's not even talk about this Supreme Court case that may give state legislatures dominance over state courts, which I think that they're going to end up doing.
Jesus Christ.
But as it is right now, even, like, you know, in a lot of these places, they're just going to ignore. I mean, they have to at some point carry out the will of the courts, but they slow walk it. They do what they can, and they get, so that they can get to a point where they just whine and complain and whatever, and they end up not having to give up as much power as they would if they would be cooperative in the process of democracy, which they couldn't give two shits about.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do worry about that with referenda. But yes, I mean, look, they can be passed. You know, I think about half the states have them. If you were to sit down and chart out states, you know, state legislatures where we'll get it through state legislatures and we won't need them, you know, and then on top of it, where state legislatures are hostile, but there are referenda, you know, you might end up like having 30 to 35 states where abortion rights, at least on some level, is legal. And again, that's not what I want, but it's certainly better than 10 states, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely. And it seems like with the polling right now, that if you're at least able to get the signatures and you can get the initiative or referendum on the ballot, then the chances of succeeding are relatively strong. I mean, obviously, there are some deep, deep red states that have initiatives and referendum, and the numbers probably won't bear out as the same as they do nationally. But by and large, it seems like an initiative or a referendum along these lines would ultimately be successful. The challenge is, prior to that, collecting the signatures, you know, getting the volunteers together to collect those signatures, and a significant amount of financing. Now, when it comes to the money side of it, what does that go to? Does that go to advertising?
Yes, all of that. Well, it costs a lot of money to go and get. Some states have very, you know, you have to get a very large chunk of signatures, some percent of the number of people who voted in the last election.
Yeah.
You know, even year election or whatever. And so it can be, you know, it can be an expensive process. That's a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously also advertising and that kind of thing. I mean, again, it's not cheap, but it can be done. I just, and again, I do think in most places, you know, some form of this can be done,
yeah,
either through, you know, if you sit down again and put a chart together of like, state legislatures can do it in these places. Here are the places that are hostile, you know, state legislatures that have the right to referenda. And then there's the few places where you're screwed, frankly, that don't have referenda and have hostile state legislatures. And even within that, look, if we're being honest, there may be a, like, even with how the polling is, I think polling is pretty good. There may be sort of 6, 8, 10, like such sort of small rural religious states where maybe we can't win on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd have to look and I'd have to see. But I mean, I do think if I were to sit down and analyze it in the way that I just said, in a strong majority of them,
mm-hmm,
we could make sure that women at least have some rights along these lines.
Yeah, yeah.
Until we can get ourselves a sane fucking Supreme Court, not made up of, you know, right wing operatives in robes two of whom probably committed sexual assault, and one of whom's in a fucking cult, you know, and the rest of them,
yeah.
Long Dong Silver, and you know, the whole rest of that crew of just
wow,
unbelievable idiots.
In all of the Clarence Thomas discourse recently, that's the first time I've heard the callback to Long Dong Silver.
That was, I'm disappointed in people goody. Not bringing that one up.
I know. I mean,
he should be referred to that way by everyone on our side.
Right. Well, if we were Republicans, that's what we would do, but we're not.
Right. So or we assholes don't. Like yeah. me. So I will.
Right. Yeah. 260.
As I like to say, I'm an asshole for freedom. Okay.
Exactly. 265,000 signatures are required in your state of Ohio to get a ballot initiative on the ballot.
There you go.
So I don't know how that plays out in terms of Ohio's population. I mean, yeah.
Well, and we could. And we've got a pro-choice, excellent governor running, Nan Whaley, who's the mayor of Dayton. And she was the one who, you know, got national attention because she handled things so well there when there was this mass shooting in Dayton a couple of years ago. And, you know, she's terrific.
Yeah.
And I think if anybody who's going to be hurt by these decisions, DeWine will be hurt because he's, of course, now trying to pretend like he's some moderating force on this. Mm-hmm. And he's not. He's a zealot. He's a lunatic, you know, so I think, you know, it's not to say you need to have a governor in place to get this on the ballot, but it doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, if we could take that governor's race, because we're not going to take back the state legislature, it's too gerrymandered, even with the reforms, if, you know, if they're put in place, then maybe, you know, just having somebody in that position can really galvanize people and help us put it on the ballot. And I mean, you know, we've gotten plenty of measures on the ballot before. If the money's there and the people who know how to do this are hired, who are here and or brought in, it can happen.
Okay, here's the best way to listen to the Bob Seska Show without all of these pesky commercial interruptions. Just go right now to our Patreon page at bobseskashow.com. Scroll down to the link for the ultimate edition of this podcast and sign up for just $15 per month. And you might be saying to yourself, oh my God, $15 a month, that's a lot of money in the time of inflation and gas prices, blah, blah, blah. But here's what you're going to get in exchange for your generous support. We're going to give you a completely commercial-free version of the Tuesday show, the Wednesday show, the Thursday show. Plus, you're going to get the Shadow Docket show every Tuesday and Thursday. But wait, there's more dings. You're also going to get the Friday After Party podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson included in that level of support. In other words, you're going to get everything we have to offer all for just $15 per month and no more commercials. Again, that's bobseskashow.com, and we thank you.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska!
All-time favorites all day long!
How is Tim Ryan doing in Ohio versus J.D. Vance? Have you heard anything that isn't getting broadly reported there on that race?
I think he's doing pretty well. I mean, you know, an Ohio Democrat is going to run differently than like a New York Democrat. As I said, you know, Trump got some of that populist fervor up in the northern part of the state with, he would just sort of utter his usual anti-trade platitudes with no idea what he was talking about. Somebody handed him a piece of paper. You know, Sherrod Brown has been a thoughtful critic of trade for a long time and some of what we do. And it's why he's able to put together that coalition where you can still win in Ohio, even though it's a couple points Republican, which is turn out your Democratic base, win all of them, and win over a couple percent of the hard hat guys that will also vote for someone like Trump. And if you can win over 3 to 5% of them, hold on to your base, you can win, you know. And he's proven able to do that. I think right now, Tim Ryan is the closest thing to Sherrod Brown that we have. You know, if you take a look at that, at that pompous geek, you know, JD Vance, and you try to imagine him like in a union hall or going to like a bowling alley and hanging out like in jeans, you know, oh my God, could he do it without khakis? You know, or hanging out at a biker rally, like you can see Sherrod Brown there, you know, wearing like the jeans tuxedo, right? Like you can see Tim Ryan there. Like they both have the accent and they've got the sort of personality they've got, like they fit there. JD Vance comes off as who he is. You know what I mean?
Yes, and it's so confusing about Ohio because all at once, you guys keep reelecting Sherrod Brown, who's great. He's a great senator and deserves to be reelected as often as possible. But at the same time, J.D. Vance has a chance in a statewide race. I don't understand that dichotomy. Maybe you can explain that sort of schizophrenia on behalf of Ohio.
I can, actually. I mean, again, it is understanding your, I mean, look, man, it's not the dichotomy I grew up with. I mean, you know, I grew up a New York City boy, right? So, I mean, I moved out here and I love it where I am in Cincinnati. And I, you know, I'm not saying anything negative. I'm just saying like, this is all learned by me out here. But what it comes down to is, you know, issues like how we deal with China when they manipulate their currency. No, not racist stuff. What I can't stand is when some people on the far left, like you can't even say the word China or you're being racist. I'm sorry, but like they're an authoritarian country, kind of the way Russia is. Yeah. Like I can name countries that have white leaders that are authoritarian. So why can I not talk about China? And it's not, you know, Tim Ryan and Sherrod Brown, they talk about that stuff. They talk about sort of giving China special rights and how it's undermined. You know, a lot of our factories have left because of PNTR, you know, when we signed that with them, and which they were against. They talk about the fact that we've got, you know, the conditions we set up for workers here and how we undermine them and how it leads to jobs leaving, free trade agreements and the rest. So, I mean, that's all, like, that's, you know, that's all really important that Democrats in some states don't need to talk about in a way where they actually connect with people. Yeah. And as I said, that's Sherrod Brown's secret sauce, is that, you know, you said we can elect people like J.D. Vance. Well, we can elect people like Trump. We can elect people like, you know, all sorts of Republicans. But we're not, you know, at least not yet. They're trying. Yeah. We're not Alabama. We're not Utah. We're not Oklahoma. We're not. It is a state that leans, if you look at the combined vote in state legislative races or House races, you get a 3 to 4 point Republican advantage. That's about where they are. So if you're Sherrod Brown and you know the right issues to run on, and you work your ass off, and you also are a charismatic candidate, people forget how good candidates matter. I remember like having this whole thing where, you know, the certain coalition, let's call it, of Bernie people got angry at me, and other people who just like, all that matters to them is ideology. Like, do you agree with me on every issue? That, you know, and I'm sorry, but I've worked in this for too long. There are some middle of the road people that are middle of the road guys who actually are too moderate for me, who are fantastic candidates. And there are some people who are leftist, who are too much to the left for me, who are fantastic candidates. And then there are people where I am, which is probably in the middle of those two areas, as somebody, I would refer to myself as liberal, you know, and, you know, somewhere between liberal and social democrat. And like, there are some fantastic candidates there. Candidates matter a lot.
Yeah.
Fantastic candidates tend to win, you know, and so it's not, that's the thing. So you take Sherrod Brown, to sum it up, you've got a guy who's a fantastic candidate, works his ass off, fits in with that sort of working class, you know, white population, rural white population, where he actually knows how to speak to people, where, again, if you can just win a couple percent of them back, you can win here.
Yeah,
you don't
have
to win like half of Trump's voters. You don't have to win a third or 25% or, you know, win 5% of his voters back that Democrats would normally win, and you can win here. And I think Tim Ryan can do that. You know, so far he's run a great race. Well, you know, I hope he keeps doing that.
Yeah, the forecaster's still saying, and I don't know how correct this is, which is why I'm asking you. It's still likely JD Vance, according to the consensus forecast. And it seems like that is closer to either being a leaner for JD Vance or just a outright toss up. Maybe I'm being
too
optimistic.
I put it between toss up. No, yeah. I don't think you are.
Okay.
I will sit here and be plenty pessimistic where I need to be. I'm not like, like I'm not pretending just so we can all feel good.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Like I would love it if Charles Booker, if I could tell you, hit a great chance against Rand Paul in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Charles Booker is a fantastic candidate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's the classic example of somebody. He's to the left of me. I don't agree with him on everything, but I think he's terrific. I support him. And all that. But if I'm being realistic, it's Kentucky and I don't know how the hell he wins.
Yeah, right.
Whereas
right.
here, again, like those forecasters can say whatever they want. They're always way too small C conservative and they never get it right.
Mm-hmm.
They always say we're going to win 20 seats when we win 50. You know what I mean? And they always do that kind of stuff. Yes. Like, I think because you start off with Ohio being Ohio, you give a slight lean to J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
When I add in the quality of both candidates, then for me in my head, it ends up between lean Vance and toss up. Right. So that's where I end up putting it. I don't think that's accurate.
Well, I think things are moving in the direction of the Democrats right now. I don't know if there's necessarily momentum at this point, but I feel a sense of things shifting. The latest report on inflation is not great, the number that we heard today, but it is starting to, I think, slow down and maybe turning that corner. We've certainly seen that with gas prices that I think will ultimately be reflected in the rate of inflation. So I think that's positive news on top of these goddamn 1-6 committee hearings, which yesterday was another just mind-blowing experience watching what happened and hearing this story of this almost fist fight that occurred in the Yellow Oval Room between Eric Hirschman and the Overstock guy. And it was just like, oh my God, a cast of 1,000 weirdos.
Guy, like,
yeah.
He's the new MyPillow guy.
Yeah. Today is the first time I've ever spoken the words, the Overstock guy. I mean, that's how deep Donald Trump's well of stooges goes, down to the Overstock guy.
If you have something severely wrong with your development, Donald Trump will find you. It's like if in some way you have deep antisocial personality disorder or deep narcissism or sociopathy or anything from the most recent edition of the DSM manual, Donald Trump will his signal, like a bat signal, will go out to you and attract you.
Oh my God. And then Rudy Giuliani probably pantsless in the cabinet room by himself.
Oh my God. Yeah. He's probably like searching for the Borat woman.
Exactly. Nicole Wallace on MS last night was saying, and she had to say this. She said, in the 8 years of the George W. Bush administration, no one was ever left by themselves unattended inside the cabinet room. That never, ever happens. But there's Rudy and all of the other freaks and weirdos from Trump's inner circle just having free reign inside the White House, wandering into the Oval Office.
How many of those guys do you think swiped shit from the China room and like put it up on eBay? I'm sure.
Yeah.
It has to be a decent number.
I mean, maybe. I think that's a distinct possibility because they're all a bunch of crooks and scam artists, a bunch of ragtag con men, as Alex Wagner called them last night, and which was perfectly apropos for what they are. But that was just the beginning. I mean, this whole situation where apparently a White House staffer lets the freaks and weirdos, including Sidney Powell, the Overstock.com guy, Mike Flynn.
I love that we should just keep calling him that because he doesn't deserve a name.
No.
Like, I don't know what his name is, and I'm going to be pretty excited if I could go through life not knowing his name.
That's right. It's like a mass shooter. I don't ever want to say the name of a mass shooter, and I also don't want to say the name of the Overstock.com guy. But they're led into the White House by a White House staffer. There was one initial meeting inside the main Oval Office. Then they went up to the residence, to the yellow oval room, where the career guys inside the White House, the guys from the counsel's office and so on, come in and like, who the fuck are you people? And why are you here? And then there's almost a fist fight. Oh my God. Don't you wish there was video? That's the only thing one of the many things I kept thinking about during this testimony is, oh my God, if there were video of this, that's what we need to have. We need to have some sort of smoking gun along those lines, don't we?
Yes, we do. We need, like, in the future, forget like the tapes. We should have, we need video of everything.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, that whole thing, I mean, that was an important part of the hearings. Mm. To me, the part, because I've just, you know, this has been one of my things I've been talking about nonstop, which is, again, like our sort of zealotry in certain places, a lot of places, about the First Amendment, to the point of where we will not enforce any of the exceptions to it. Yeah. We just sort of, you know, whistle past inciting riot and terroristic threats, mm-hmm. and the various other ways that the First Amendment is not supposed to apply, and let people get away with sharing mass disinformation that incites people to violence. And we had it right there yesterday. I mean, what we saw yesterday with those two guys, what was so mind-blowing is it would be like interviewing two people that had just left a cult.
Yeah.
Because that's what this is. And that's what people don't seem to get. They think that people like you and me are being hyperbolic when we say this. They are in an enclosed universe where everybody is fucking nuts like they are. And they're getting the same crazy information. If I were to tell them, like, I had magic pixie dust and I'm selling it at $100,000 a pile and I picked up a bunch of fucking dust, you know, sand, they would go for it.
Like, how many bags of magic beans do you think they've bought on the way home from work?
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Like, look, I mean, Rick Perlstein, I don't know if you know, he is the author, if you've ever had him on with all those books on Nixon, Reagan, and whatever. You know, I remember him writing a great piece on sort of how, you know, conservative culture is sort of merging with grift culture. And if you think about it, it makes perfect sense, because their marks are the same people. They tend to be people who are older and are sort of not as aware. I'm trying to say that respectfully, but people who are less educated, you know, like, it merges into the same group of people, less worldly. And, you know, so they're the mark for someone, you know, like any one of these Republican grifters is going to be the same from some scam guy selling some, you know, magic beans crap that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so these two guys who were there yesterday, one guy who just apologized profusely at one point, rose up relatively high, I think, in the Oath Keepers, you know, and I mean, they both were sitting there and they were, you know, like, hey, Donald Trump and other Republicans told us that the election was stolen. We had no reason to doubt that was true. They told us to be here. We thought we were doing the patriotic thing for our country. And again, I'm not freeing any of these people of accountability. You have accountability for your actions. That you can't have a functioning society if you don't. Mm-hmm. It can't just be like, I believe what the dude said on the internet. But we can still try to prevent people from falling into like these just, you know, Alice in Wonderland, like fucking, you know, rabbit holes where, you know, they're getting it from all around. They're watching Fox News and it's okay. You know, like there are other countries, you know, we have truth in advertising standards here for companies. Why do we not have them for politicians?
Yep.
Why is it if a company tells me that their car is okay, but it blows the fuck up, they're in trouble, but a politician can lie about anything they want?
Yeah.
You know, why is that? Why is it that we got rid of, you know, the fairness doctrine always only applied to you know, the publicly owned assets, right? So like networks or whatever. I mean, it wouldn't have applied to the internet or cable TV and all. But you know what? Any place that's getting some public funds, and I bet all of those guys are in certain parts of their companies, yeah, make it a requirement. Find a way to do it. The Republicans find a way to do anything they want to get done.
Yeah.
You know, like if people are not getting accurate information, we got two real problems. One is we can't act the bigger one, or I don't know which one's bigger, but I would think this one's bigger because it's the whole ball game, which is we can't have a democracy because the whole sort of theory behind democracy is a populace that has opinions and reads and thinks and comes to some conclusion that I think this is better for me and that's better for my family and this is what I believe in and so I'm going to support that. Well, if we've got a huge chunk of our population that literally is being fed dog shit and has no idea what the truth is, it's impossible to have a democracy. And the second thing is, it's incredibly dangerous, as we saw on January 6th and we saw with the attempted kidnap of Gretchen Whitmer and those fucking, you know, loons that attacked the Oregon wildlife sanctuary or whatever it was. Or I mean, there's so many examples of this. And if, you know, if they can feed these people nonstop bullshit, they can turn them into violent actors. And so, and we saw two of them yesterday, two that had been deprogrammed, had left the cult, and they explained it. And like, we can't just sit here and do nothing while they continue to do all of this. I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I think our already existing exceptions to the First Amendment, not to mention plenty of other things we could pass and we could do that do not go afoul of the First Amendment. Again, if companies have to tell the truth about what they're selling me and that doesn't run afoul of the First Amendment, well, why would a politician who's selling me on their version of democracy not have to do the same?
I mean,
I don't see how one would violate the First Amendment and the other one wouldn't.
Absolutely. And they're telling us that this is a revolution that they're engaged in. They're engaged in an effort to overthrow the current government, to overthrow democracy. Obviously, on January 6th, they tried to overthrow Congress. And not enough people, I think, are speaking about it in those terms, that the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, the Donald Trump disciples all collected into one. They tried to march into the Capitol. They got into the Capitol. Had they been more successful and they weren't a bunch of cosplaying doofuses, they might have actually succeeded in literally overthrowing the Congress. Because what Malcolm Nance describes as his scenario for how this might have gone for January 6th is Donald Trump marches down there with him. He gets the Secret Service to agree to drive him to the Capitol. He would have marched into the well of the House chamber and declared himself some form of emperor and the Congress dissolved. And that is a very distinct possibility. And we don't need for that to actually happen before the Justice Department and the FBI begins to start treating these militia groups like what they are, which are revolutionary terrorist organizations. And they need to be treated as such. Otherwise, this is just going to keep happening. This is, I mean, this is not over on January 6th.
I mean, this is, you know, and there's an article I was looking at. Where was it? People should be. It's at Just Security, if people have ever read that.
Yeah.
You know, and the article is the GOP's militia problem, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, and Lessons from Abroad. Mm-hmm. And look, anybody who's alive, if you paid attention just to what was going on, for example, in Ireland, you know, with you know, the against the British, right? And in the 80s or some of these other places, like, this is the way this sort of stuff goes down in you know, in unstable democracies, or even worse, which is you've got a political wing of your party and then you've got the military wing of your party. And the military wing of the party, you know, and they all, the political wing of it just sort of pretends to not really know who these guys are. Oh, well, we don't really know them. But now we know they do, because all these people were texting each other, emailing each other, getting together with each other. Yeah. And we know, I mean, Jesus Christ, the guy that runs the top fucking Proud Boy guy, I think Proud Boy, Oath Keeper, well, I don't know. They're all the fucking same to me.
Yeah, they're the same
make
guys.
Racist,
yeah.
Does it make me racist? I don't know.
Hardly.
but the top guy there, Stuart Rhodes, was a fucking aide to Ron Paul. I mean, he literally worked on Capitol Hill for on his campaign. I can't remember which, for Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Like, the connections run so deep here. There already are a couple of state parties, if you read this article, you'll see, who have used one of these militias, one of these militia groups, as security for events. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like fucking, you know, Rolling Stones having the what do you call it? It's the Hell's Angels, like, you know, as their security, and people getting stabbed at a concert. They learned pretty quickly that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, we're talking here that there's a number of state parties and other groups that use these militia type figures, these lunatics, as their actual security.
Jesus,
you tell me what's going to happen when one of those guys, all of whom can easily arm themselves with any assault rifle they feel like, one of them who is, you know, the what you'd expect from these folks, emotionally, you know, let's call it challenged, racist as hell, you know, hair trigger, ready to go, and the wrong person makes the wrong move at one of their events or says the wrong thing, and they just start firing into a crowd, because it will happen.
Yeah, you know? It will. And it absolutely is going to happen unless this movement, the movement that surrounds Donald Trump, is bottled and jettisoned into space at some point. Because otherwise, I'm sure you can see the trajectory of the timeline if it continues on its current path. And the current path leads to, if it hasn't started already, and January 6th is pretty good evidence that it started, an insurgency turning into sectarian violence, where different factions are fighting each other. Governments are kind of trapped in between, some supporting one faction, others supporting another faction. It's just going to be endless, bloody, horrible, and it will collapse American society. And I don't think enough people recognize that. But it seems to me as if the Federal Bureau of Investigations should be thinking along these same lines, that this is where the current trajectory leads us. And maybe it's a good idea that we try to thwart these groups from getting more militaristic, stockpiling more weapons, developing more strategies for how they're going to do it under whatever circumstances they'll do it. I don't know why, or maybe it is happening. I have no information coming from inside the FBI to me personally under deep background or anything like that. I have no idea. I like to think that maybe they are thinking along these lines at
I would Justice hope Department. So. Yeah. I mean, again, like, but I don't know how often I feel like, you know, I'm not some genius, and yet things are completely obvious to me, and they don't seem to be to some of the people that we trust to be the adults in certain situations.
Yeah,
like, it would seem to be that, I mean, again, I haven't been one of the ones who's been constantly ripping Merrick Garland, except for I've said his communications have been awful. And I think he's done great harm to our democracy by the fact that he doesn't regularly communicate. He doesn't even have to tell people any specifics, but just constantly giving people confidence. And really, it shouldn't be him. Yeah. It should be a spokesperson for, I mean, this is an unprecedented situation. This is not some normal investigation. So you don't treat it that way. Somebody should be getting up weekly at least and saying, hey, you know, we've moved forward on a bunch of things and blah, 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 blah. And you can't share certain details. That's fine. But at least then we get the confidence and have some sense that there's leadership there. And so in that case, that way, I can absolutely say, as somebody who's a communicator, he's been fucking awful. I can't criticize on the legal side because I'm not a lawyer. And I do respect the fact that some folks who I think are smart have said, you know, that these things take a while and this and that, while still wondering how it is that some of the stuff that Mueller laid out in the report there, you know, when it comes to sort of obstruction of justice and these kinds of things, have just seemingly been ignored. And we're bouncing up against, you know, statutes of limitations, 5-year statutes of limitations right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't see anything happening, and I don't know that anything's happened. And so, I mean, I don't fully know what to think. What I do know is I'm long past where I just assume everything's going to be okay because the adults who understand this stuff are in charge.
Okay, back with more Cliff Schechter right after these words.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Bob Seska plays more music.
I think there's a big concern, and I don't know a whole lot about Merrick Garland's worldview on this shit, but I get the sense that he's deeply concerned about the long-term ramifications of, let's say, a Donald Trump indictment and prosecution. I think he believes that, well, maybe from a selfish point of view, he doesn't want to be the guy who touches off that civil war, that creates the spark that ignites it, that or exacerbates what's already there to a point where the level of violence increases somehow.
So he'd rather be the Weimar Republic?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a dumb, I mean, whatever it is, it's not sound logic, because what he's doing by...
Would he rather be the Mensheviks?
Yeah.
You know, would he rather be the... I mean, I can give more examples because, shit, I spent way too much time studying history thinking I was going to spend my life as a history professor. But there were a whole lot of people along the way who thought, you know, oh, okay, you know, we don't want to, don't go too fast, mm-hmm. you know, don't push too hard.
Yeah, and I want to be...
Let them, they're just crazy, let them say what they want, everything will be okay. Yeah. Oh, look, they attacked, they tried to overthrow the government, they didn't really mean it. And history's littered with examples of that.
And to be clear, I believe that there is action taking place. I believe that they are looking at Donald Trump. I believe there's a grand jury in Washington, D.C. right now that's been impaneled that's investigating all of this shit. And they're, I mean, Neil Katyal himself, I think yesterday, said that it's very likely that Donald Trump will be indicted for one or more of the things that we've heard about in the course of these 1-6 committee hearings. So in that sense, I'm not as pessimistic as some are about Merrick Garland. But at the same time, I feel like if he doesn't move, if he doesn't end up indicting Trump, I think the reasoning would be what I described a second ago, which is that...
No, and I think you're right.
Yeah.
I just think if anyone who has the sort of cursory understanding of history should get that it's going to suck either way.
right.
Yeah. Like, there's no good way to do this. There's no easy way to do this. I worry about precedent too. I worry about all those sorts of things because I actually care about democracy. And I don't like indicting our leaders and going after our leaders. When they started this game with their bullshit impeachment of Bill Clinton, you know, 20 something years ago, I was deeply disturbed by it as somebody who had only been involved really in politics at that time for a couple years.
Yeah.
And that they would take this process and abuse it for partisan aims, you know, to delegitimize a president was a danger. And it turned out, guess what? They paid no price for that. The only price, I guess you could say, is they lost the House in 98, but likely people turned off by all of the sort of sleaziness around Clinton because of what they did. A lot of those people voted for Bush mm-hmm. instead of Gore, who agreed more with Gore. And you might even say they were rewarded for it. Yeah. And look at where we are. Because people that abuse governmental processes and pull this kind of shit never pay a price for it. Mm-hmm. So could there be like large scale violence if Trump's indicted and other members of his family and other top cronies? Could there be some terrible things that happen? Could there be a bunch of people who end up like rioting? Absolutely. I'm not like acting like, this is all easy. Mm-hmm. But the alternative is not having a democracy.
Yeah.
The alternative is sending the very same message we've sent to these guys again and again, which is there are no consequences. So try again.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Cuban Missile Crisis, where there was no great solution for that.
Right.
It was just picking the solution that was less catastrophic or less potentially
exactly.
catastrophic. And
no,
I think that's
got to
be, that's got to be the scales that are weighing in Merrick Garland's head right now. Like, what can we do here that holds Donald Trump accountable, but at the same time doesn't ignite a second civil war, which there's always that potential. And I think that potential is going to remain whether Donald Trump gets indicted or not. So that's a whole other story. But actually, speaking of Donald Trump, before I let you go, we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss the fact that Donald Trump's White House staff tricked him into thinking that he not only nominated Jeffrey Clark to be acting attorney general, but also that he named Sidney Powell to be special counsel. And that actually didn't happen. They refused to go through with the paperwork. And Donald Trump thought that he was doing this, but he didn't, because they didn't go through with all of the processes that need to take place in order for that to happen. So all of these people, all of these Trump loyalists, and it doesn't matter whether they're Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani, even the insiders, even Patsy Baloney and all of those guys, to a certain extent, Giuliani, even Cassidy Hutchinson, was complicit in the operation of that administration for four fucking years, including a devastating pandemic that killed 400,000 Americans in the course of just like the last two, three quarters of 2020 alone.
And they were all in on that. A realistic study at this point, you know, will tell you that at least over 100,000 Americans died needlessly. The number may in fact be much higher. But like at least 10, you know, I don't even know where we are. Have we hit 1.1 yet? I'm not even sure.
Oh, yeah, we're up there.
But at least sort of 10 to 15% or something didn't have to die. It may be much bigger.
But the idea is they all get hired. They all turn up for their interviews. They accept the jobs. They serve at the pleasure of the president for that period of time, knowing at some point as they're working for Donald Trump that everything the press and the Democrats and liberals and Twitter, et cetera, have been saying about Donald Trump is 1,000% true, to the point that when it came down to the Stop the Steal scam, this gigantic election fraud, this coup that Donald Trump tried to engage in, when it came down to that, they did this thing where they tricked the tin pot dictator into thinking that he had signed these two orders and that Jeff Clark was going to be attorney general and Sidney Powell was going to be special counsel to investigate the election. And involved in that, too, was Donald Trump thinking that he authorized the Department of Defense to collect all of the voting machines and engage in this like huge operation. Yeah. And then they didn't
like
do it.
Like a fucking child.
Yeah, exactly. Like a child. So they, on some level, I think they realize, and testimony aside, they're compelled to do that by law, subpoena, oath, etc. Beyond that, though, they finally, at least at that point, went, yeah, those guys, all the critics are right. All the people, what they're saying about Trump, they're all right.
Amazing. Yeah, right. It is still amazing to me, though. It's sort of, it's like reminiscent of me saying to like my kids when they're five or six, oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll have pizza tomorrow morning for breakfast when they're throwing a fit, you know?
Right, right.
And of course, they forget about it by then and we don't do it. Like, this exactly. is the way they had to treat Donald Trump.
God damn it. It's, you know what? It's amazing when I hear a story like that, and this all played out in yesterday's hearing. When I hear that story, I go, how did human civilization survive this past 4 years? I mean, there were 1.1 something million Americans who didn't survive. But, you know, by and large, there were no mushroom clouds. There is no nuclear winter occurring, which is obviously the worst case scenario when you have someone who was as incompetent as Donald Trump. And it's just amazing.
And nefarious, I think, too. I mean, and obviously as evil as he was. Yeah. Because all it would have taken is like one or two cronies in the wrong place, right? Like when he went to, what's his name? Oh, you know, head of the Joint Chiefs. And he's like, can we shoot into the crowd of protesters?
Yeah, Milley, yeah.
Like, yeah, imagine if that had been Michael Flynn sitting there.
Oh, absolutely.
He would have been like, sure, how big would you like the gun to be? Would you like a mortar? You know, like, I mean, you know, we could have been in that kind of a situation. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, frankly, when I learn all of this stuff, it's kind of like it reminds me of when I study all history and wonder how the hell we've all made it this far, quite frankly.
I know. Absolutely. I mean, there were some stories from the Middle Ages, for example. How do we make it through the Middle Ages, for God's sake?
That's how I've always known that there cannot be any such thing as intelligent design, because look at us.
Right, right.
Just fucking look at us.
We could be headed for another Middle Ages if the theocrats take over. There was a conference a couple of weeks ago where all the Christian dominionists got together, including Senator Rick Scott from the state of Florida, talking about how he's going to follow, everyone should follow the sound of the guns and suit up and get ready for war against the radical radical left Democrats. And this was all about
that freaky alien looking motherfucker. Which one was it? Man in Black 2? I think where Will Smith had to fight a guy who looked like Rick Scott, like the guy that sent the little versions of himself.
Slender Man. Yeah.
I mean, what world are we?
I don't know.
What happened, man? What happened to us?
I know. That's what, you know what? I wake up every morning thinking that exact thing, Cliff. To be perfectly honest, that's where I start my day. And then it's just like up to the news of the day to disabuse me of that opinion. That's the strategy for me every day.
I mean, it's as good as any other, man. If I had any better strategy, I'd give it to you. But like, I were reminded every day how much, like, you know, trial and error. Well, how much of evolution is trial and error? Look all around us. Yeah. Like, we tried that. Oops, that wasn't good. Sir, you know, Seb Gorka. Nope, that wasn't a good one. We shouldn't have done that. That's essentially.
Let's talk about your YouTube channel once again.
Yes.
How often do you post videos up there? How often does a new video go up?
Every freaking day.
Every day.
Yes. Even like I do film a few ahead of time for weekends. And even when I've been on vacation, I have missed an occasional day. But generally, you will have anywhere between 2 and 4. Longer ones tend to run for about 4 to 8 minutes. And then I've got the 1 minute shorts that I do too. Also for people that want to grab just like a quick whatever on, you know, if it's a story that can be told quickly. And I do a couple of those a day. And I love it, man.
Yeah,
I'm loving doing it. We're growing. We're at about 3,500, subscriptions and, around 2 months, a little bit less, which I'm pretty happy with.
Yeah, that's outstanding.
But, obviously, I want to blow it up because the more it gets bigger, I can spend more time doing it. And, I don't know how else to put it, but it fits me quite well. Let's say it that way.
How can people subscribe? It's youtube.com/...
There you go, folks. YouTube.com/ and it is my first initial C for Cliff and then Schecter, which is just Schecter.
There you go.
YouTube.com/C Schecter. Schecter. Please come by and, subscribe and turn your notifications on and comment and call me names and, whatever you'd like to do over there. But
yeah,
we're having fun.
It's a daily must watch. You have to see them every day. They're relatively short, right? So it's not like a huge expenditure of time. You can go and check in with Cliff every day. Again, youtube.com/C Schecter. I got a link in the description under this episode at bobsesca.com. Hey, thank you so much, my friend, for stepping in today. I apologize to everyone for not having Robbie Pickering here. Something happened with his schedule. And so we're in the process of trying to get him back for another Wednesday, maybe next week or the week after that. But meantime, as I said, thank you for
my rule of thumb is anytime Bob Seska says, "Can I talk to you, Cliff?" I say yes, if I'm being waterboarded at the time or something, I may have to say no. But otherwise, I'm in.
Well, what's funny is we kind of do this on the phone on a regular basis. What we just did for the last 50 minutes or whatever it was, we do this on the phone regularly. So it's a good idea to record them once in a while.
Yeah. I might just get too relaxed and say something I shouldn't because I just have these conversations with you. This is what we do. So why not do it for the show?
All right. Well, sounds great, my friend. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now the time has come to see the writing on the floor. When I finally look up, I'll know things better than before. 'Cause I was born for these days. I was born for these days.